It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. And I'm joined now by Washington Times national security reporter Sean Waterman. Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Good afternoon, Andy. I'm great.
Congress questions for Petraeus will have to wait. The hearing, Senate and House Intelligence Committee, will proceed, but without the general?
That's right. The acting CIA director, Michael Morell, General Petraeus' deputy until Friday, will testify in his stead alongside the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, and the head of the National Counterterrorism Center, Matthew Olson.
All right, so some of that information was shared. We always think of the CIA as being secrets kept within secret organizations. I guess that's not the case. The second in command will take over.
Yeah, I mean, he is, well, very, he ran the agency while Petraeus was going through the confirmation process after Mr. Panetta had already left to head the Department of Defense. So, you know, that was a 4 or 5 month stint as acting director, and he's actually, his name's been mentioned as a possible full-time permanent successor as well. He's very well regarded.
Is there the thought that Petraeus will eventually have to testify before those committees?
Well, I mean, if they want him to, he will. My impression is, from talking to a couple of people that know him, you know, relatively well and that have followed his career closely, that he would do it if they asked him. I mean, he would feel duty-bound to do it. And even though his lawyers might well advise against it, you know, given the circumstances. But I think that if they ask him, he will do it. And I'm not sure that they will ask him because, frankly, I think that Mr. Morell can probably answer all their questions about Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also hard to imagine having Mr. Petraeus in front of these committees without someone talking about the affair that he had. And, you know, that could sort of be awkward and embarrassing, wouldn't it, Andy?
Yes, of course it would. But by the same token, it is brought upon oneself. Okay, so...
I feel, actually, it would be in some ways as awkward and embarrassing for the lawmakers as it would be for Mr. Petraeus, you know? I mean, I just... But that's probably because I'm English.
All right, so let's dive into this affair a little bit, if it's not too embarrassing. When did the FBI know? What did they know? Was there a threat to national security? And why didn't they inform Congress of the findings? Now, please, go ahead and answer all of that.
Answers on a postcard, right, Andy? Yeah, I think that, you know, we don't have definitive answers to all of those questions. I haven't been able to match this yet, but there are stories today that the FBI knew back in the summer that they didn't tell. This is open, you know, on the record.
Right.
Dianne Feinstein said she found out, and she's the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. She found out when the press started calling her office on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as we know, the first person outside of the FBI and the Department of Justice to be notified was the Director of National Intelligence, who is Petraeus' superior, and he was notified on election night. Now, according to the Attorney General guidelines, the FBI is supposed to notify FBI headquarters if, during any investigation, they come across, you know, a sensitive matter involving a domestic political figure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this probably qualifies, don't you, Andy?
Yeah, I certainly do.
So one imagines that, you know, this went up the chain, but the question is how far and when. So if they knew over the summer who was sitting on it for 3 or 4 months until the election.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, on the other hand, this was clearly a very delicate matter. They had come across these emails. They had discovered the affair, what they call collaterally, right? So this wasn't what they were investigating.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking at something else. They were looking at threatening or harassing emails who had been sent to this woman in Florida. Although that raises a whole other set of questions, because the last time I checked, you know, if I was being harassed by someone who, you know, an ex or so, or a former partner or, you know, something like that, right, by email and took it to the FBI, I don't think that I'd get that level of assistance. So there's some questions there. But having discovered, for whatever reason, having launched this investigation and then having discovered the affair, you can understand it's a very delicate situation. And this has a lot of history in the FBI as well, because, you know, frankly, J. Edgar Hoover, used to deliberately collect this kind of information about people's personal indiscretion so he could use it to pressure them and get what he needed within the administration. And in fact, you know, it made him something of a sort of king behind the scenes because no one dared cross him.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, you mentioned Dianne Feinstein, and I saw her yesterday on Fox News with Chris Wallace, and she said, in the past, if there had been news like this, at least the chairman and the vice chairman of both the House and the Senate Intelligence Committees would have been notified, and, of course, they would have kept that, you know, to
right.
themselves.
Right.
And in this case, it absolutely did not happen.
No, that's right. It did not happen. And as I say, according to the Attorney General guidelines, at least FBI headquarters and probably the Department of Justice should have been notified. And, you know, and that raises the question of if they weren't, why not? And if they were, why did they, again,
yeah.
sit on the information for 3 months until after the election?
Mm-hmm. The other player in this, this Jill Kelly, what do we know about her? What's her connection?
She is a woman who lives in Tampa, Florida with her husband. She is described as a family friend of the Petraeuses. He was based there when he was head of Central Command because that is based at MacDill Air Force Base mm-hmm. near Tampa. She was a volunteer in some capacity at the base, and General David Petraeus and his wife Holly socialized with them.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, she apparently started receiving anonymous emails of a threatening nature that referenced her relationship with Petraeus. And, you know, I want to caution on this, Andy, that this is still at a very preliminary stage.
Right.
You know, my reporting, everyone's reporting on this, I think. But, you know, from what we can tell so far, she takes these emails to a friend of hers who's an FBI agent. Now, and this is where I lose the plot, as it were, because I don't understand how you get from there to they found emails from David Petraeus, you know, explicit sexual emails, apparently,
mm-hmm.
from David Petraeus in Paula Broadwell's account, right? So they traced these emails from an anonymous email account, not Miss Broadwell's own. They traced them somehow to her, to Miss Broadwell. And then they find out that she's been corresponding with the David Petraeus.
I gotcha.
And I don't understand how that happens. And quite frankly, I think it's a bit scary because
mm-hmm.
this is domestic surveillance, Andy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how many of us would not have something embarrassing revealed if the FBI looked into our private email accounts?
Oh, not me.
Right. So, you know, some people talk about skeletons in their closet, Andy. You know, I've got a whole graveyard in mine, and I don't want anyone poking around in there. Let's call the FBI fine gentlemen and ladies, though they undoubtedly are. So this is to me, that's a very troubling part of the story that we'll need to look at more, you know, as the days go on.
All right. Finally, Petraeus resigned. Was it expected of him, or was it something that was mandatory?
Well, now, that's a very good question. And again, this comes back to all of the things we don't know about this story. Because it seems to me that if it was simply an extramarital affair, then I'm not quite sure why he has to resign. Alan Dulles, for example, who was, you know, a very celebrated head of the CIA, had serial affairs while
sure.
he was director,
mm-hmm.
and no one seemed to mind or bother. The classic line is that it makes you vulnerable to blackmail. But, I mean, I don't know, Andy, that seems a bit 1950s to me,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I really think, can you really imagine, especially with a man like Petraeus, you know, if the Russians came to him and said, you must give us the keys to the CIA or we will reveal your affair, you know, I'm sure he'd do the right thing. So I think,
yeah.
on the other hand, Paula Broadwell apparently broadcast the access she had to classified information while she was working on this biography of General Petraeus, apparently broadcast her closeness to him, although, you know, obviously not the fact that they were having an affair,
mm-hmm.
but in any case, that makes her a prime target. You know, according to a couple of intelligence people that I've been talking to over the weekend, made her a prime target to be recruited probably unwittingly or under what they call a false flag by a foreign intelligence service.
Yeah.
Which foreign intelligence service wouldn't love to get next to someone, you know, who's that close to the director of the CIA, even if they didn't know about the affair?
Yeah.
So to me, and then also you've got the thing that if they're swapping emails on their personal accounts, right, probably a Gmail or a Yahoo, a regular kind of web-based account, which are not secure, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not from state-sponsored hackers. So, you know, again, there's that. What kind of information were they exchanging? I think it's a little premature, actually, to say, as the Senator Feinstein did yesterday, that there were no security implications. I don't see how we can possibly know that at this stage.
All right, well, as always, Sean, I appreciate you joining me this afternoon to kind of bring us up to speed on this. I see all the makings of a major motion picture coming out of this.
Well, perhaps you and I should collaborate on the screenplay, Andy.
Very good. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate
it. All right, cheers.
Sean Waterman, national security reporter here at the Washington Times. 4:58, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.